Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Today we are going to be talking about the spiritual warrior. We're going to be talking about a book that has been written by a man whose life has been dedicated to reaching people, helping them to understand that they can discover this warrior self within. And it's not necessarily going to be in a way and manner that you would typically see expressed through television or through some other forms of media, because a warrior represents different components. My guest today, who is going to be talking with us about this wonderful book, The Warrior Code, William von Holst, is back on the East Coast. And William, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, William, this is a book that has been written by a man, Imre Valion, and this is such a fascinating combination, the two of you working together. He is Hungarian. In fact, Imre fled communist Hungary when he was quite young, and he ended up dedicating his life to teaching what he calls wisdom science. Give us a little bit of his story. I know Hungary, when was it, 1956, when the Russians went in and were just running people down like a lawnmower does green grass out in the yard. And it was a very, very hard time. What happened to him? How did he escape? Where did he go? And how did he evolve into the wisdom science?
That's a lot of questions, and I'll give you the best understanding that I have, because I've heard him talk about it many times personally, and also when he's teaching, he's also talk about it. He was born in 1940, so he's very much a child of World War II, and, of course, lived in a very modest home in Budapest. And they got through the war, and then, of course, the Soviet Union took over. And he was 16, a young man, young boy, and he just had this inner vision that he must flee Budapest. And he had thought that he was going to be coming to Chicago. It was, you know, there were people behind the scenes that were arranging, because you obviously would become a refugee when he crossed the border into Vienna. He had this image that he would end up in Chicago, because that's where they were telling him he was going to go. So the story is, you know, of course, he got across the border. He was absolutely terrified, because they can shoot you. There's like a no-man's land between, you know, the communist country and you know, the democratic freedom of Vienna, Austria. And he was just terrified that he would be shot in the back, because young boys just don't walk across the border in the middle of the night. And he gives this very interesting story that he could see that the guards' kind of minds got scrambled in a very peculiar way, and they basically perhaps even didn't see him. He crossed the border, and he was told that plans had changed and that he was not going to Chicago but was going to go to New Zealand. And, of course, you know, living in, you know, a communist country in the mid-50s, he had no concept at all of what New Zealand was. He was actually terrified of going down to New Zealand. Anyway, he ended up in New Zealand, and so he's very much a Kiwi. He has a Kiwi accent and kind of a Hungarian accent as well. And so he lives in Budapest, and he also lives down in New Zealand. And, you know, he's approaching 70, or he is 70 this year, and these are his two homes. And his spiritual knowledge, which he calls a science, is something very unusual, because it's not something he's studied from somebody else. It's not something that he's read in books. It's not scholarly. It's not researched. It's not channeled. What he has done is that he, from a very, very young age, maybe 3, 4, he would have these very profound mystical experiences. He doesn't talk about it very often, but occasionally he'll talk about it. He'd be lying in bed, and he'd be taken into a very profound dimension. And of course, as a 3-year-old boy, he was terrified of this inner space, but he kind of, was thrown out of it, and then he decided, oh, I'm going to go check it out again. So he's quite adventurous. And so what he did from a very small age was that he explored these inner dimensions. So what his writing is about is in a very scientific way to describe what each of these dimensions are, what the physical characteristics or the reality of each of these dimensions, which are quite different than the physical dimension. And what he's done then is he's able to teach from these very profound understandings of these inner dimensions. So the warrior, the spiritual warrior, we may all have kind of a preconception of what that means, running around with swords and, men fighting each other. And that's not really what a spiritual warrior is. What a spiritual warrior is someone on the planet who really becomes connected to their inner self, really becomes connected to their innermost being, and being connected to that innermost being, then they operate not from their own personality, not from what they think should happen, but kind of from the best way I could describe it, a force, an invisible field that they're connected to on the inner dimensions, and they operate through, or they allow that inner dimension to operate through them here on the physical plane.
This is a man who has written a number of books, and it's been my observation from my studies of different belief systems, whatever someone may have, that there is a basis of what I call foundation. There is a common thread throughout all of them. And I think the warrior code is very complementary. This is not something that is a dogma. It is not something that is meant to disempower anyone from whatever their system of belief might be. It is meant, as far as I am able to observe, to empower the individual to understand that they have a position of responsibility within their lives, and it is an awareness of themselves so that they can operate within a level of integrity. Now, Imre Valjean has published more than one book, and this is something that when I found the Warrior Code and I received it, I was very impressed with a statement where he said the true spiritual warrior has three outstanding qualities. One, will and power, energy and dynamism. Two, love and wisdom, understanding. Three, intelligent activity, purposefulness. And this is something, again, that I find is a common denominator among any wisdom, level of wisdom in any culture that I've ever observed. And I'm not talking about the stuff that people make up later on, but this is a basic essence. And in going through his book, and in this one, the Warrior Code, he's got 365 commentaries about the spiritual warrior. And he talks about different stages. Now, why did he break it down into three stages? Why not six stages or 12 stages? Why did he make it three?
Well, what these stages are is the process that everyone basically goes through living here on the physical plane, living, you're incarnated, we're all here because our soul has wanted us to be here. The soul has chosen our parents, our soul has chosen where we're going to be born, our soul has chosen the time of our birth. So the soul has a very specific mission when it incarnates. And, of course, Emory and, most major religions have always embraced this notion of reincarnation. So the soul is another attempt on the physical plane to incarnate and to express itself here on the physical plane. And then when an individual has that impulse within to step on a journey, step on a spiritual path, become mm-hmm. interested in whatever truth that they, however they interpret it in their own particular language and their own particular culture, there's some very powerful stages that we would all go through. And the first stage, of course, is just kind of understanding our personality, understanding, you know, our strengths, our weaknesses, understanding we make mistakes, we learn from our mistakes. You know, we may feel that the divine is working with us, or we may feel that the divine is working against us. I mean, it's all this kind of almost an experimenting, you know, in our personality, kind of figuring out what is. And then what happens in this is that the soul can become very prominent in an individual's life, and the soul can make itself known. There's a wonderful New Zealand term, they refer to it as bossy boots. Bossy boots, but this is very New Zealand, you know, there's no equivalent here in English or, you know, our language, but a bossy, if you meet someone who's a bossy boot, means that they're very dominant and they kind of control things that are happening. You know, we've all met that kind of personality.
Mm-hmm.
So what the analogy is that you may have a soul who's a bossy boots, meaning that the soul is really intending to be present in your life and could be really pushing you around, pushing the personality around. In some ways, not very pleasant. I mean, some ways a bossy boot soul can really step into your life and just really make changes that cause havoc to the personality, diseases or accidents or crises or all kinds of things. But what's happening is that the soul is wanting to make itself present in that personality. So that's, Emery refers that as the second stage, and we kind of go through this battle, in a way, battle of, you know, the personality, because it's kind of losing control when the soul really steps in. So it's that battle between the personality and the soul. And then, and we all go through that, and then the third stage is when really that the soul and the personality become, well, in Christian terms, they talk about the mystical marriage. You know, the marriage between the inner and the outer, the marriage between, mm-hmm. you know, you as a self-expressed personality and your innermost self. So when that happens, then you become an instrument or an expression of a much greater force. A real, you actually become an expression of the divine itself. And so that, in Emery's language, that is what a true spiritual warrior is that they've married their personality with their soul, and then they become an expression of the divine itself. So that the personality doesn't think something, it doesn't act out of its own agenda, but allows the divine itself to express itself.
Words are so interesting, because every culture will have different terminologies for expressing their awareness of insights and or experiences, and it really is intriguing to me how we will use words to try to convey a picture. One of the pictures that he talks about in The Warrior, the Sage, and the Ruler, he talks about three major streams of spiritual energy that he considers are vital for the evolution of human beings on the planet. And stream number one is directed power. Stream number two is energy current. And stream number three is active intelligence. Energy is used in so many applications in conversation today, whether it's for healing, whether it is the dynamics of accomplishing things. It is a word that has many different facets to it. The warrior, the sage, and the ruler is something that gives a picture, I think, of multiples that we have within ourselves. And to me, the ruler is the one that has self-control. And he said that that is one of the most important things that one has to learn. And I can remember as a young girl reading in the Chinese culture that that was one of the disciplines that you were supposed to learn. At least that's what I was reading when I was a kid. That self-control was very important. The person that did not have self-control could be manipulated and managed by just about anyone. What was your feeling when you were first associated with Emery Balyan and were learning about his different philosophies? How did it resonate with you?
Well, I was on the spiritual path for, I would say, maybe 20 years. And I had studied with many, many teachers, some quite famous, some not. And I always had come to this point within 2 years of working with these spiritual teachers, this would be in the 70s and the 80s, that I had reached the end of their knowledge field. And I could see that so clearly. It's like I could understand that they were not able to take me any further because I was at the end of what they understood. And I just about had given up. And then I had a dear friend up in Canada who called me on the phone. I was living in Chicago at the time. And she said, oh, you must meet this man. He's working with a hierarchy. And I trusted her implicitly and decided in that phone call to go up to Canada. And I attended a two-week retreat with Emery. And I very quickly, within the first few days of being with Emery, I realized that there was no end to his knowledge field. I understood very deeply that I had really was quite blessed that I had met someone who was really a profound teacher on the inner levels. And this was 25 years ago, and I'm not trying to toot my horn or anything, but I can honestly say I still have not reached anywhere near the end of his knowledge field. It's just incredible. I'm still learning. I intend retreats in New Zealand and Europe and North America, and you know, every time that I'm with him, I'm still discovering more and more and more and really learning, you know, what the spiritual path is all about.
When the information about directed power, what I liked was the description of it. It says means will, dynamic energy, fierce independence, and having a feeling of destiny, but also understanding choices for action, awareness of people, situations, events. And this energy stream, as he defined it, made the warrior. Now, the sage, which is the wiser person within us, and everyone has that inner sage, that inner teacher, that is stream number two, and that is universal love and compassion, wisdom, understanding many different aspects of the universe, and inspiring others. And there's more to it. I'm just sort of skimming over this. And stream number three is the ruler. And that is the person that executes ability and decision-making creatively, is very intelligent. And this is the person that can take the role of being the elder, the wise one, for others. And I find when someone has that, usually they're very wise for themselves as well, that it's something that's not just going outwardly. It's something that they have to demonstrate inwardly. And then he goes into four different types of warrior, which I found fascinating, the physically strong but with no intelligence, the feeling, emotional, idealistic warrior, the mental, calculating, cunning warrior, and then there's the spiritual warrior. And I think, again, all of these parts are within us. And it's amazing to me how there is so much information in this little book. It's not a huge book, but he supports meditating, so we become aware of this. And there's a statement in his book where he says, no anger, no enemies. That's a pretty powerful statement.
The statements are very simple, you're right, but they hold enormous kind of power. I'll read one. They're actually referred to as aphorisms. Number 50 is, the greatest victory is victory over your own mind and your own physical senses. And that can be, when you really understand that the victory, so in a sense you're almost in a battle with your own mind, and you're also in a battle with your own physical senses, because what we do is rely on our physical senses to tell us what is true, and our physical senses tell us what's true on the physical plane, but they're not able to help us on the inner levels. So what Emery is saying, and this, what's so beautiful about him is he's very, very practical. What he's saying is that we also have spiritual senses, the same as physical senses. We can hear spiritually, we can see spiritually, we can feel spiritually, we can touch spiritually, and we can taste spiritually. So every time that we sit down and we do a meditation or some kind of practice together, we're constantly working or allowing our spiritual senses to become really present within us and not always judging the world and making sense of the world through our physical senses. So that's, you know, it's like a warrior becomes really attuned to the many, many dimensions, and I don't think he mentions it in this book, but we are, you know, a human being lives on seven dimensions simultaneously. And the dimension of our soul is just one of the lower three dimensions. There's actually four very powerful dimensions above our soul. So the whole journey is for us to become victorious over our own mind, victorious over the limitations of our physical senses, allowing our soul, you know, that sensitivity, that marriage, to become established. And then there's even a further step where the soul and the personality become become the voice of an even deeper energy, a deeper spirit within.
I had to chuckle when I read one of the aphorisms. It said, it's number 250, it says, accept a tiger as a tiger and a mouse as a mouse. Don't try to turn a tiger into a mouse or a mouse into a tiger. Thus avoid a lot of emotional conflicts. I love that. I just thought that is so true. How many times do we as people look at someone and instead of accepting them as they are, try to make them into what we think they should be? And consequently, we end up being agitated, just tremendously agitated, and maybe even angry, upset for some reason. And again, these are thoughts that he has put. He's got 365 of them. And I really liked this one that was 286, and it reads as follows. The master warrior has no ego, no self-centeredness. Being just himself, he is spontaneous in action, responding to the need of the situation, doing nothing with his ego, avoiding friction and conflict as much as possible, unyielding to oppression, yet never oppressing others. He is dispassionate, quiet, and calm within. Accepting what is inevitable, he adapts spontaneously and responds to each situation perfectly, as always in the moment, never looks back to the past, nor bases his hopes or dreams in the future. His actions are effortless, for they are derived from the calm mind. He remains centered at all times, has no fear of any situation, never forces, commands, or dictates any person or event. He is awake in being, the heart of the universe. Now, that's one of the longer ones in the book, but that has such a powerful image within it of someone that is really awake and understands that they have to be very fluid in life. And many times that kind of wisdom is not really attained until you're older. Sometimes when you're younger, you might be lucky enough to be aware of it. But usually it is the older individual that's gone through a few experiences that understands it, but many times we still wage war with ourselves. What's the greatest impact that being around Emery Valjean has had on you?
He's such a normal man. I mean, he's lived with me in Chicago and San Francisco and San Diego, and what I'm just astounded by is he's so normal. You know, if you saw him walking down the street, you would just think, oh, he's kind of a frumpy, funny-looking man, and you know, with a funny accent, and yet, you know, there's an incredible energy field that surrounds him. So when, you know, you get out of your kind of busy mind and the busyness of the world, and you kind of just tune into to who this being is, you realize there's this vast energy field that he's connected to. And in that aphorism that you just read, what's so powerful about this is that he's not acting from his own agenda, from his own personality, from what he thinks should happen. What he's doing is that he is awake in being. Being is a dimension way, way above the dimensions that we live in. He's awake in the heart of the universe, meaning that his heart chakra is completely radiant and open and conscious, so that this, and I spoke about this earlier, is that the divine itself, the force field, I mean, it's just right out of the Star Wars, that force field operates through the spiritual warrior. So that force field, which is absolutely intelligent, absolutely loving, you know, is light itself. So what happens, and this is what all human beings are destined to be. We are destined to be these, you know, these spiritual warriors, these cosmic citizens who are able to act not by what they feel or fighting or the agenda and, you know, with a mind that's very agitated or emotions that are all over the place, but they're able to act from an absolute stillness and calmness, and they allow that energy of the divine to work through them.
Your mentioning Star Trek to me was quite significant because you think of the team of warriors that are portrayed in the story theme and how they have the use of the Force, but they have to learn how to use the Force and they have to become disciplined in using the Force. And whenever you think about any famous story, there is always that component about understanding the self and having to go through the wages of battle, whether it be physical, spiritual, emotional, mental, it doesn't make any difference, to find the strengths that you have, to recognize that you can be more than what you are. And I really like the aphorism 98, as a spiritual warrior, you're one with the universe. You can meet all the other great spiritual warriors on the plane of the enlightened mind. Believe in yourself and believe in the great brotherhood of enlightened warriors, and you will succeed in your quest. And again, I think referring to the story of Star Wars, or, you know, you can take so many different stories that have been utilized throughout history, but that's more the modern day, futuristic type of scenario. But that's something, it's an ongoing thing, and that's it never stops. Every generation has to discover it for itself. Now, I know Imre Valliant does these classes and various things in Europe and in New Zealand, as you said. How often is he in North America?
Well, as he's in his 70s, so at this point he's focusing in New Zealand. Actually, next year he's not going anywhere. He's staying in New Zealand the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
He's not traveling to Europe or North America. So in a way, he's becoming more focused and kind of, I would say, in the very latter stages of his life. So we do have classes in North America. We have classes up in Canada. We have classes in California. There's classes in Arizona. So there's definitely people working with Emery's material. And then, of course, you know, there's also the opportunity of attending a retreat with him in New Zealand or Europe as well.
Now, he goes into meditation in this book, talks about it, and he's got more than one exercise or comments regarding meditation. But I really think that the wisdom he expresses, again, is a cross-cultural wisdom that I think anyone, when they would read the book, it's something you could open just at random to any page. What is it that grabs your mind that really seems to fit with whatever circumstances you may be going through in the way of experience? And I really think that there is so much wisdom here. Now, William, you have been and have become not only the editor of what he publishes, but you also are someone that has had a very strong association for over 25 years with him. What is the website that people can go to find out more?
There's two websites. The one website is about Emery and about the group and what he's doing and classes held all over the world. And that's planetary-transformation.org, O-R-G. And there's another website, and that's if you're interested in any one of his books, and that's called soundinglight.com.
All right, give those again. Planetary-transformation.org.
.org,
and
right.
What's the other one again?
Soundinglight.com. So you can actually go on to Sounding Light, and if you want to order a book, you can order one of his books.
Great. Well, I'll tell you, there is so much wisdom that I think we need to be aware of, and the Warrior Code, that is 365 aphorisms of the spiritual warrior, again, it's cross-cultural. It's not something that is just with any one group or any one thought. I think that Imre Valliant has been able to compile some wisdoms that you could find expressed in many different cultures in many different ways. And I think that this is a book that is something you could keep, well, let's see, if you wanted some nighttime reading and just have some quiet moments. It's a great book just to pick up, open at random, and let your eyes fall on a tidbit of wisdom that you can allow to feed your mind with different understanding. It's really quite a nice book. And I want to thank you so much, William von Holst, for being with us today. And again, the websites are planetary-transformation.org or soundinglight.com. William von Holst, thank you so much for being my guest. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Hey, telephone lines are open, and if you would like to chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. How about 888-627-6008? That's the telephone number to call into. 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, all I need is your first name or your initial after that. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that, well, that you're curious about. Animal, vegetable, mineral, it doesn't make any difference. Just give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Quick like a bunny, I want to let those of you who are listening in from Alaska, I'm going to be in Fairbanks, Alaska, where it is a warm, balmy 23 degrees. Woo! Anyway, I'll be dressed for it. And Fairbanks, Alaska, I'll be broadcasting from there tomorrow, and then on Thursday and Friday, I'll be broadcasting from Anchorage, Alaska. So for those of you listening in from Alaska, if you'd like to meet with me while I'm there, call me at my office, 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Also, November the 12th, that's a Saturday, in Western Washington, I and Robert Newman, who is a feng shui specialist, we are going to be putting together a class called The Quantum Mind. Now, this workshop is about empowering you and your life on multiple levels. We're going to be working on your intuitive skills as well as, well, showing you how you can create your own physical environment of harmony that's going to support your deepest creativity and desire for success. Now, the fee for the class, it's from 10 until 2, 10 a.m. until 2. It's going to be held at 5250 Bridgeport Way West, and the doors will be opening at 9:15 in the morning for registration. If you want to come to the class, our student amount is limited to 25 people. The class is $39.95 prepaid or $45 at the door, and just give me a call or email me, donna@delphiinternational.com, if you would like to be a part of this class. The class size is limited because we want to be able to interact with each of you. So Robert will be doing the first portion of the class, I will be doing the second portion of the class, and we have wonderful refreshments that are going to be served. And again, Robert is involved with feng shui, and I am going to be helping you to develop your own natural intuitive skills in simple ways. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat, 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a tidbit of information with you about something called aquatic wheels. That's right. So many things go on in life that are beyond what we are accustomed to. And recorded events throughout history about various happenings are really fascinating because science does not necessarily have an answer for it. When I think of how technology has evolved just in the last 10 to 15 years, and we look at outer space with a whole different perception than what we had just a short time ago. Why? Because we have developed a technology that shows us really how little we know. And it is mind-boggling and also exciting at the same time. It's something that shows you that there is an infinite source of possibilities in a universe that is expressing itself in so many ways we're not even aware of. Well, this is something that happened on May 15th in 1879, and it was documented by Commander J.E. Pringle and a crew of the HMS Vulture. Now, they were in the Persian Gulf at this time, and they saw a pair of giant luminous wheels. In their estimation, these wheels were over 40 yards in diameter, and they were spinning with an incredible speed above the water's surface. How were they spinning? Well, they were turning in opposite directions at 75 rotations per minute, and from the mizzen top, it could be seen that the phosphorescent wheels were traveling parallel, sinking into the water, lighting up the bottoms of the quarter boats as they passed under the boat. Now, this went on for over a half an hour. Then, in May of 1880, there was another captain and his third officer aboard the British East India Company steamer, the Patna. They had a similar experience. They saw the same thing. Now, they noted the time. It was near 11:30 in the evening. It was a very dark night. So here, these enormous, luminous wheels were on either side of the ship. They were able to determine that each of these spinning wheels contained 16 spokes 250 yards long, and you could see them from every angle. Sometimes these spinning circles seemed to touch the side of the ship, and they were keeping the ship company, it seemed like, for a good 15 minutes. Fascinating stuff, isn't it? Never know what's going on. Who knows? Maybe it was a UFO, drone? Yeah. Don't we use drones? We use them today. We can see things from thousands of miles away. Maybe this was someone that had an advanced technology that we, in the 1800s, didn't have a clue about. I wonder if it's been seen very many times since. Who knows? Lots of strange things have gone on at sea. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. You've heard the saying, it takes money to make money. Well, that is truer than what you would expect. Raising zinc and copper prices are really causing the production expenses of coins to go up. The U.S. Mint, in their 2010 annual report, had a loss of $27.4 million last year. This is all about our wonderful copper penny. Do you know it costs 1.8 cents to make a penny? That's right. Now, they've wanted to retire the honorable penny, but too many people don't want to give it up. And they're trying to figure out what they can do so the penny will cost less than a penny to make. Now, to retire it, just understand something. It probably won't be retired anytime soon, but they've got to figure something out. But you know what? The nickel costs 9.2 cents to produce. Figure that one out. Yep. It's just the way things are at this time. Little tidbits like that are interesting to know, but I also want to share something with you. And I started talking about this, I think it was yesterday, about how in New York, over 11,000 smartphones have been stolen from people. They're just ripped out of their hands. And on the black market, they're just selling things right and left. Well, I came across something about stolen credit cards. And stolen credit card numbers are being sold online for as little as 7 cents each. Now, let me share the rest of this information with you because it is a very, very big crime element that we're having to deal with. And it's so important, if anything is ever lost, that you report it immediately so that those numbers cannot be used by anyone. Criminals that are looking to buy and sell personal information are in what they call an underground economy service. And it is essentially giant e-flea markets full of stolen data. So you can imagine that the authorities are having to become aware of this on such a level and to be able to work with this on the, you know, the global perspective. It is absolutely very, very difficult to deal with. Now, in April of this year, there was a security software provider, Symantec, that came up with this information. They said thieves often buy and sell credit card numbers in bulk, driving down the cost. And it's easier than ever for them to nab them. So, how do you protect yourself? You have to think before you click. And this is a statement by John Harrison, who is a security response manager for Symantec. Be vigilant about infected URLs and emails, instant messages, and social media programs, even from trusted sources and friends. This is something that lots of times we're not aware of, and I know because of an experience that I had a year ago that there is spyware out there that is so sophisticated that it can be on your computer, and sometimes your security system doesn't have a clue it's even sitting there. And it has a way of hiding, and that's why it's called spyware, and it piggybacks onto whatever you do. So this is something that, well, I don't know that there's going to be an easy remedy to anytime soon. And they're constantly working on it. As a friend of mine who works in security with a major bank says, Donna, it seems to be getting worse, not any better. Donna Sebo here. Keep alert, be aware, and stay savvy. And that's just a daily thing that we have to pay attention to. We're taking a break. This is Donna Sebo. And, hey, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call into. And I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. So give me a call if you'd like to chat. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hey, this is Donna. I have a wonderful story to share with you. In fact, I had wanted to share it with you last week when we had the story about Cody, the border collie. Well, this is a story about another dog whose name is Cody, and he is just absolutely gorgeous. He is a golden retriever, but he has a story that was shared by a lovely woman by the name of Pat, and she said she was watching one of her students run alongside of the golden retriever, and the boy was just so happy. The interaction between the boy and the dog was just wonderful. And she said this was so special to her because she was seeing how the dog's interaction with the boy was helping this youngster develop a level of self-esteem. Now, Pat became a teacher, and she said, it's sort of a surprise that I became a teacher because I hated school. I just absolutely hated it. She said today she probably would be diagnosed as being ADD, but she said, you know what? She couldn't comprehend certain things. When she would read, it's like her mind would not retain it. And she couldn't sit still, and she was humiliated by some of her teachers, and she thought she just wasn't very smart, period. Well, she was in the seventh grade when her parents gave her 3 weeks at a writing camp. They knew their daughter was very bright. They were sort of frustrated. They didn't quite know what to do with the scenario, but they said, we've got a smart kid here, so we're just going to send her off to camp. Well, by golly, they noticed something, because when she was at this riding camp, when she was training a horse to jump over a table or participate in an obstacle course run, she was just absolutely amazing. And she had to learn all kinds of information while she was at this camp. And everything about the horses, she was just fascinated with. For the first time ever, she just felt like she was in the right place. She just absolutely thrived. And so this was something that gave her an inspiration when she was going to school. By golly, if I could do this at the riding camp, I can do anything. So she was inspired. Now, her husband, when she met him, she found out that he was having learning challenges as well. And she realized that he could get through it, but they had something in common. And she found out that one of his real strong interests was dogs. So she, with her husband, when they were dating, picked up books on dogs, and they would do all kinds of research on animals like search and rescue. And eventually, of course, they got married, and this interest kept growing. And when she adopted Cody, who was a border collie, just like the border collie we talked about on Friday, by golly, she began to train him. And she trained with FEMA. Well, Cody found a 92-year-old man, and he also tracked down a frightened witness that had seen a crime that was just horrific, and helped the police get the witness to a safe place. And Pat said when she was working with the dogs and interacting with them, she was just amazed at this wonderful camaraderie. But she said, it was amazing to me how he affected children, because he did all kinds of special things. But she said, with the children, it was amazing how they would be willing to read or do things as long as the dog was involved. This one little boy that had been having a problem in school with learning, because he developed such a good relationship with Cody, went over, got a book that he was supposed to read, plopped himself down with the dog, and did exactly that. He started reading out loud to the dog. Pat, when she observed this, she said, if this one little boy is so inspired to read because of our Cody, and she said, what if I got the children involved in search and rescue training? What if I got them involved in interaction with dogs on a different level? Well, what Pat did, she established the Cody Project. And what she did, she invited 5th through 12th graders. Some of these kids had learning challenges to help train the dogs. Now, dogs have to practice. That's just a reality. And because the kids needed to see how, with practice, you can really accomplish things, especially when you are consistent about whatever you do, well, the results were just amazing. There were like 24 kids that were improving in math because they had to measure materials to build agility props for the dogs. They were also having to work on their writing and doing reports. They had to be responsible for keeping records on the animal's progress. They had to learn how to work as teams, and they had to play hide-and-seek with the dogs to teach them search and rescue. And she said, because it looked like such a simple thing, the kids got so involved, and many of them that couldn't sit in a class and focus, my goodness, they were spending hours with these dogs. They were doing beautifully. And one little girl that had severe dyslexia, she was giving commands to dogs before she wouldn't even speak up, because her brain and her mouth would not work in harmony. Well, this project is 4 years old, and the capacity of change has been so phenomenal that a lot of students that didn't think they could ever do much of anything, one of them is thinking of becoming a forensic scientist. And there is a Kids in Need Foundation that awarded Pat a grant, named her the 2010 Teacher of the Year. And this is what Pat said. She said, what these kids are doing is a win-win situation. The dogs are being trained to save lives, and that makes the kids feel better about themselves. It just goes to show that everybody has the ability to be a hero. And I've got a beautiful photograph of the golden retriever that she has now and the children that are working with this dog. And I think this is something we need to remember. There can be challenges in front of us, but there may be a different way that we have to approach those challenges. And instead of accepting labels that someone may put upon us, why not create a label of your own that enables you to be true to who you are and what it is that means the most to you? Labels are funny things. Sometimes if they're of a negative aspect, they seem to stick like super glue to you. But remember, all it takes is a little mental rubbing alcohol applied to that sticker, and you can remove it and replace it with whatever you feel you need to be. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow, the broadcast will be coming from Fairbanks, Alaska, and I hope you'll join me. And the guest is going to be from Ripley's Believe It or Not, Frank Wolf. I hope you can join me. Donna Sebo here. Talk to you manana. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
on Mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.